I'd like to call the House Committee on Rules to order. Today is Thursday, February 9th. Welcome to those who are watching and in attendance. Colleagues, we're going to start off with introduction of some committee measures, and then an informational meeting will follow on the Citizens Initiative Review. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll go ahead and introduce them as a block.
That'd be great.
Okay. I'd like to introduce LC 198, LC 310, and LC 311, all dated February 8th, 2012.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chair Olson moves that LC drafts 198, 310, and 311, all dated February 8th, 2012, be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? And colleagues, you should have those drafts, if not in your virtual world in front of you. Any discussion about these?
Yeah.
Representative Holt?
Oh, thank you. Just filling in for Co-Vice Chair Berger, and just allowing you to know that supporting the introduction of these bills does not mean that you will support what's in the bills and does not compel you to vote for or against them in the future.
That is correct.
Was that awful close to that?
That's good.
Close
you did enough. Good.
We appreciate your indulgence in introducing them as committee bills, but no further commitments past that. Thank you very much. A further discussion? Seeing none, motion carries. And we will now move on to, I'd like to open an informational meeting. Thank you, colleagues.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to make sure the record reflects that I was a yes vote on that motion. And I'm assuming that's the case since I was in the room when you gaveled it.
Yes.
Thank you,
Representative.
As opposed to everybody else not being a yes?
That I'd like to open an information meeting.
Sorry,
on the Citizens Initiative Review, we are going to have an update and evaluation report on this initiative. We're going to start off with Katie Knobloch. I hope I pronounced that correctly, as she is on the phone with us from the Department of Communications at the University of Washington, and then we'll have a panel of folks in the room. And I know some of you who have been on the Rules Committee for a while will remember this discussion. But it's always good to know what progress we're making on projects such as this. So is it Dr. Knobloch?
Not yet.
How about Dr. DeBee? Well, welcome. Thank you for joining us. If you would introduce yourself for the record, just name and name is fine. And then we will start off with you. And we do have couple documents in front of us. We do have a summary evaluation of the 2010 Oregon Citizens Initiative Review document. From your office in front of us. So.
All right, great. Co-Chairs Kotek and Olson, members of the committee, my name is Katie Knobloch, and I'm a doctoral candidate and here at the University of Washington in Seattle. Thank you for having me and for allowing me to provide testimony over the phone. I truly appreciate you coming. So Professor Hankels is going to be discussing some of the evaluations, so I'm going to try not to double up on what he's saying. So I'm just going to touch on a few of the things that he's not going to touch on, and then I'll talk a bit more about some of the recommendations that the research team would like to stress. Well, we found the process highly deliberative, and we found that it did have significant impacts on both voter knowledge and voting choice for those voters who read the statement in the voter's guide. In terms of deliberative quality, Professor Hankels, again, is going to talk about this in a bit more detail. I'd just like to mention that along with the research team's assessment that the process received high marks in terms of its analytic quality, its democratic quality, and in terms of the final statement that was written. I'd also like to stress that the panelists' assessments of the process backed up a lot of these findings. So I believe that you said you have the legislative reports in front of you. So if you would like to flip to page 11.
Actually, I'm sorry, we just have the summary sheet. But I think, okay. Do we have it virtually, folks?
That's correct. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members, the whole report is available electronically on the shared drive to the members who have access.
Okay, wonderful. No big deal. basically, you'll find that our assessments of it being high quality were backed up by the panelists' assessments. So you'll find that the panelists as a whole were highly satisfied with the process, and we found that this was the this held true for both the short term, so we evaluated them right after the process was completed, so it's a Friday at the end of the week, and then we also asked them to assess the process a few months later and right before the election that covered the initiative. And you'll see for both the short and the long term, the panelists were highly satisfied with the process, and this satisfaction has been extended to the statements that they wrote for the voter's guide as well, particularly in regards to the key finding sections of the statement. At the end of the week in Salem, all of the panelists felt that they had heard enough information, and again, the large majority maintained those feelings after the election, in which they had an opportunity to hear how the initiative was being debated in the media. And this indicates that the process provided the panelists with enough information so that they could reach an informed decision. And finally, regarding deliberative quality, I just want to note that, I'm referring to my charts, that the panelists made a lot of movement on their assessments of the initiative from the beginning of the week to the end of the week. So in short, most of the panelists reported coming into the process with a predetermined, with no, but by the end of the week, we saw significant shifts in both the panelist support and opposition to the initiative. And to indicate that the process, that the panelists used their experiences at the CIR when reaching their final decision. So they really took into account all of the information that they heard, all of the deliberations that they'd gone through before reaching their final decision. So moving on to the utility of the CIR for voters, again, Professor Hinkles is going to cover some of this. So I'd just like to highlight a few things. One of the things that was interesting was that we found that the CIR allowed several voters, so about 40 to 30% of those people who read the CIR statements, actually said that they found new arguments or information regarding the initiative by reading the statement. And the voters seemed to spend about as much time on the CIR statements as they spent on either the explanatory statement or the paid-for argument, showing that voters who were exposed to, or who did take time to read the voter's guide really did give it about as equal weight as they did to the other things that were in the voter's guide. So now I'm going to briefly address a few recommendations that the research team thinks should be considered. I know that you guys are moving forward with the decision for the 2012 CIR. We just want to touch on a few of those initiatives. First, we definitely support the creation of the commission comprised of former panelists, moderators, among others, and we're glad that this recommendation seems to be moving forward. We think that this commission is going to be vital to maintaining the high quality of deliberation and the integrity of this process over the long run. In addition, we'd like to see a few things added to the CIR agenda. As I mentioned, we found that overall it was highly analytically rigorous, great quality of discussion, but there are a few areas we suggest for improvement. Particularly, we'd like to see more space for the consideration of important underlying values. We thought that values could have been given more consideration throughout the process. And we'd also like to see some time built into the process to give the panelists a bit more opportunity at the end of the week to review their final statements so that they can update those statements or make any changes that the panelists from the opposing side feel needs to be made before it goes into the final voters' pamphlet. We also really like to stress additional training for advocates, witnesses, and panelists. Again, we think that this is going to be essential to the long-term integrity of this process. In particular, we'd like to see training that specifically addresses the quality of information in the process, reviewing for advocates, witnesses, and panelists, ideally, what specific types of information are needed for this process and how to differentiate pertinent evidence from irrelevant evidence. We've got a number of additional recommendations in the report, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have about either the recommendations or anything else about our overall evaluation. I think Mark is going to cover a lot of this information, but if you have any questions that he can't answer again, I'm more than happy to answer any of those questions. So thank you for your time.
And thank you for your testimony. Are you able to stay with us? Because what I thought we'd do is have the panel come up and then have you answer questions as they come up. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks for sticking with us, and we'll assume you'll be back on mute. Could we have Mark Henkels, Tyrone Reitman, and Owit Shuford join us up at the front here? And whatever order you'd like to go in, I don't know if you had anything prepared in any particular order.
Well, I think I'm going to go first. I'm Dr. Mark Henkels from Western Oregon University.
Welcome.
And but I did want to know what my purpose would be here so I don't waste your time going over stuff that the committee's already done extensively. I provided sort of a talking points that sort of, it's like an executive summary that I tried to boil down what I thought were like the key charts and key points of each section of the report. So I'm reviewing the report here, not the whole process. Would you like me to go through the whole talking points as fast as I can, or would you like a particular focus on any particular area of it? I could go either way, or you could tell me how much time you want me to take, and I can work with that.
Well, Dr. Henkels, thank you for being here. And since I was not on the Rules Committee previously, but I know most of the members were, I don't think we need to go into too much background. But I do think it's helpful that, you know, there was having an evaluation of this type of project is, you know, pretty unique. We don't have that very often. So I think the high points and low points of where we are in terms of what we've looked at, we did hear some, you know, potential recommendations for next steps from Ms. Knobloch, so I think that kind of feedback would be very helpful.
Okay, so I'll kind of do I'll go through on a high grade. Great. Okay. First of all, this is focusing. I won't deal with the process at all. Then, the evaluation report itself made two basic conclusions. First, that the process was done well and it promoted high quality deliberation, and I'll elaborate that on in a second. And that the statements did help Oregonians decide how to vote. Now, when they evaluated the process, okay, whether in fact the deliberations were, you know, had integrity, they used three key criteria. One's analytical rigor, which relates to the type of information they used, the quality of the debates, and how they put together the final report. And reading it as an outsider, and I was consulted after they were done, they gave me the report and their analysis of it. They basically used an evaluation based on the analysis of the observers themselves, looking at the process, and they extensively used participant ratings, which is pretty good. I mean, that's inside and outside. It's a good process. Democratic discussion was the second key quality they looked for after rigor. And the democratic discussion they evaluated that based on participation selection. That's a key element of this whole process, is who participates and how they get to the process. The discussion process itself, the formats it takes, for example, would be they worked pretty consistently trying to prevent people from taking positions prematurely, because it's the success of it hinges partly on not having the internal panel become advocates right away. The idea is that they're supposed to share information. Now, they obviously bring their values, and that's part of it as well. But regarding the particular thing, it's best not to have people defending positions as much as evaluating information and opening. And, you know, and they can discuss values, certainly, and how things affect values, but they shouldn't be defending a particular yay or nay regarding the measure, for example. And they tried to maintain that very well. And then they also had participants rate it themselves, which is very good, of course. I mean, people know whether they feel they've been silenced. People know whether they feel pressure. There are some cases where a couple individuals did feel pressure, but I think overall, when you look at those, it's actually pretty remarkable, I think. We have had more controversial measures in the past, so I can't say all measures be that way, but it was surprisingly, that was well facilitated from what you could see there. Now, the final thing is they reviewed the statement as an outcome of the process, and the evaluation was based on, again, the individuals themselves, the panelists, evaluating whether they felt that those were fair conclusions based on the information they're exposed to in their discussions. And then they had outside reviewers consider whether the facts were accurate. And so it stood up in all those categories. Now, the key, I guess, the bottom line of the evaluation could be found on what's on the second page of what I've submitted, but table 1.1 in the score, in the actual report, and it's a grade sheet. And Well, grades. Anyway, they gave themselves high grades, but having reviewed them by their standards and seeing, you know, I found it to be, you know, it was quite valid. And what makes it, to me, my viewpoint, quite valid is that you have a clear description of the process, and you have evaluation by people who are professionals on the outside, but also that it's all affirmed internally. I mean, if the participants said something different, if the panelists said something different than the outside observers were saying, that would certainly be a big problem. And they don't. Instead, it all pretty much dovetails. The second part of the CIR evaluation had to do with the impact of the CIR. And regarding that, the key finding was that the statement was not read by the majority of voters. And majority? Yeah, many. At any rate, a large number of voters never really were cognizant or acknowledged reading the statement. So obviously, it would have no impact on them. But of those who read it, it seemed to have. It was found to be very. It seemed to be influential. And when they surveyed them, they found them to be useful. And the chart I included for that kind of just shows where they were doing a survey online, and they're directing people to look at different sources and. Basically, when they looked at, when they didn't give them any direction, and when they had them focus on Secretary of State information, and when they looked at the fiscal information or the summary in the voter's pamphlet, they found those people are pretty much along state average in the state. But when they read the CIR statements, the outcome was quite a bit different, which means that the CIR made arguments that spoke to the people who read them. That's the way I would interpret that. And it's very distinctive. Regarding Measure 73, I picked that out because it's the most powerful example of it. And it certainly altered the number of no votes, for example. And you can see that on page 3 of what I've given you. There's also some specific examples of increased knowledge that I think were really good that they found through phone surveys, where they said, well, if you've read it, you know, what things did you, you know, what do you know compared to what you knew before? And there's really concrete ones, such as regarding Measure 73. And these are cut and pasted right from the report. What I was trying to do is make it so you could look at this and get what I thought was the gist of the report. And for example, Measure 73 would apply to minors, and that mandatory minimums do not have a proven deterrent effect, and other things that were independently verified as factual statements. And the same with 74. There's some really critical ones, such as 74 would pay for itself, that it wouldn't directly spur recreational use or other elements of the law. So it showed that people were considering arguments and facts they hadn't considered before when they were exposed to it, all of which speaks to it being effective as a way to educate voters, as long as the ones that they're identifying are accurate. And what I felt in my analysis, and other people verified those points as being accurate. So when you summarize the effectiveness, you can turn to page 4 and table 2.2, and you can see that it does influence voting outcomes, and it should. Or at least it should, unless the public already understands the issue fully. If the public understands the issue fully, it should work perfectly. Mm-hmm. But the idea of this is to help the public better analyze the ballot measures. And this shows that it does influence the outcome, and presumably that would mean that they're able to take information from this focus group, this well-informed focus group, and make use of it. It didn't guarantee things would pass. In fact, in both cases, the majority was on the losing side of the voters' outcome. And of course, part of that's that the CIR didn't reach everybody. That's inherently a limitation, but also because, you know, there are other considerations. I'd just like to make a couple kind of, so I think the evaluation of the CIR process was a good evaluation. And the key reasons why is because the design was a clear, transparent, and very logical design. There was good expertise involved at all elements. The observation and when the participant ratings were all kind of independent verifications. And so you have a pool of different information coming together to say that this is legitimate. You know, if you had one of these variants was not fitting in, it would certainly be a cause of concern. They all seem to dovetail into the high rating. Regarding the CIR impacts, I think their evaluation there was also good because, again, they use clear measures, they use diverse measures, and pretty logical measures of whether it was effective. If I may, can I just say a couple comments on the overall process. Having read a lot about initiative processes around the country and the use of them, and also knowing something, I'm not an expert on deliberative democracy, but I know quite a bit about it. Clearly, there's a lot of problems with any direct democracy with misinformation or disinformation. And so that, you know, it's something that is a challenge for any democracy, I think. And when you're, you know, if you're going to have a direct democracy that depends with major questions on it, I think it's something to consider. So is deliberative democracy a possible approach? There are two things I really like about deliberative democracy that I think is worth noting and using this focus group, at least as a source of information, an alternate place to look. One is it directly confronts factual and value disagreements, and that is the thing that won't happen in the general media typically, and certainly doesn't happen in advertising. I mean, that would defeat the purpose of political advertising. But even in the general media, actually, if everyone read the Oregonian every day and read a general newspaper every day and read the pros and cons, they would gradually over time see most of the major arguments. But people don't. Instead, they tend to channel into whatever channels, conservative or liberal, and they listen to whatever radio stations they listen to. They, their searches are directed towards certain sources, and all which is great about an opening of the world, but you never see one fact that's in, you never get to say, well, here's a fact I heard, and you never see it directly tested or refuted by someone who might think that that's not a good source. This process does that. But the other part to it is it also says, well, you know, people don't agree. Let's get to the facts of it, and then let's see what we really disagree on. Let's not be arguing over, you know, what it costs if we can find that out for a fact. Instead, let's argue about whether it's worthwhile. And I think that stripping off the factual disagreements and actually bearing the value disagreements, and values, you know, what's better to spend money on is a value, and that's a good value. That's one that should be debated, and people won't agree on. But if you don't even have the numbers right, and you think that a policy is going to do something it won't, then you can't even really compare what the bottom line values are. So for me, I think it's a really interesting effort to deal with this problem. And there is a legitimacy that goes with the state's implement, you know, with having the state at least, you know, put it into the voter's pamphlet that people will pay a lot more attention. You guys might be aware of Project Vote Smart that in a way tries to accomplish something like this, but they have to struggle with legitimacy in all kinds of places, and people might not, even you may dispute that kind of stuff, but it's really hard to do this in the public's eye, and this is one way you can kind of validate it. One last, that's where I'd like to leave off. It's just right there.
Yes, Speaker. Mr. Kocher.
Mark, Doctor. Sure. I appreciate what you said for, you know, trying to legitimize what Project Vote Smart does. I mean, and I guess some of it is, and you've really been describing the instrument here with what's happened here, you know, for the CIR. That whole process.
Yeah.
I guess that has always bothered me to some degree with Project Vote Smart, is the instrument itself, how it's been developed. So.
Well, this is very different than that.
Yeah, it is.
For one
yeah.
thing. I don't have a problem per se with, I don't have a problem with any information source. Let me say that first off. And Project Vote Smart has at least one virtue in the sense they tend to use very diverse, they tend to expose a voter to diverse measures. But, you know, but this is a very different kind of thing, because even then, it's presenting things that haven't been subject to discussion. So they will say, well, you know, League of Conservation Voters rate someone this way. They voted this way on one bill. And all of you guys know, everybody that thinks much about politics realizes votes are inherently compromising, right? And yet they'll find one that becomes, you know, to epitomize how you feel about healthcare, how you feel about education or taxes or whatever, right? That's what makes deliberative democracy different than that kind of rating system. But when I was comparing, what I was saying is that really having the state, having it come through the state and being in the voter's pamphlet as something that the state should never endorse what they say, but the state endorsing that, you know, it's kind of hard to say. What I mean is, of course, the state shouldn't endorse that they recommend it passes, The state giving it a prominence in the thing, I think, gives it, will draw more attention to it, which at least makes people consider a situation where these things, where facts have been stripped away and you're not, you know, you're not just a voice for an angle,
okay.
I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Did you have a question?
Can I?
You may.
Dr. Hinkles, when you did this evaluation, before you started, had you noted this in the voter's pamphlet all on your own, or were you aware of this process all on your own?
The CIR process? Oh, I was involved with it before the rating, the evaluation.
Okay.
And I was called in at some point to kind of talk about, I helped identify issues and things like that. So I was involved with it before. But this process is something that's been kicking around in the literature for a while, the need for it. It's kind of interesting, not just deliberative democracy, but issues regarding the initiative. They've been a big issue in Oregon politics for a long time, and so.
Are you aware of anything on, as far as we've gone with this in any other state?
You think this is?
You know, I'm not, but I can't say I have. I wasn't expecting to talk here today until I got called last
week.
I really need to go and find that out. That's a great question. I don't know of anything quite like it in the country. Certainly, I don't think there's any sanction by the, you know, well.
It isn't sanctioned. It's allowed to be.
Allowed by the state.
There's a distinction there that
prominence.
We have been very careful about.
Yeah, I agree, and I've been trying. Yeah, you're right. I want to tiptoe around that, but. I think you're right, but I don't know of any. No.
Thank you.
Just to comment, there's probably no other state that would be as good a laboratory as us either. I mean, maybe California, but no other state has any type of the extent of reliance on ballot measures that we do. Isn't that right?
We in California are on a league of our own when it comes to numbers.
Yeah.
I would make the case that Oregon's better suited for it than California. California. It's deep and more, I think there's more chance to strip away to an honest debate in Oregon, to be honest with you. Maybe I shouldn't say that. This isn't
prejudice right there.
I think California's, hey, I wrote a whole book about, that focused on, well, I helped edit a book. It's all about the divisions in Oregon, you know, but of course it was written out, you know, it was originating in the 90s. But even so, I still think we have a different potential for being able to see information and see common interest. Not that we all will ever agree or do that kind of stuff. I don't have any illusions about that. And this kind of process in California, I just don't know if you could, you know, I just don't know if it would work there. I just think it's, I don't know if you could break through and have that happen. It's also such a huge state. I can see 24 people almost representing Oregon in a way, or at least, you know, having a debate and getting something. But with California, it's just like, I think it's hard to, I think it'd be hard to scale up. It might be good for California, but I think in Oregon, we still are, I think there's still more of a sense of common identity, and I don't know. We definitely have a more involved citizenship in a way. I mean, we have both higher turnout, but we also have a higher, by a lot of measures, where, we're probably more suitable for trying to inform ourselves, I guess, at least at this point.
Well, I just wanted to comment that I think Professor Hinkles would agree with me that we can name one thing that California's better at. They grow better oranges.
Well, duh.
For now.
But other than that, we're struggling.
Climate change. They're going to lose the oranges, too, pretty soon.
Thank you, Dr. Hinkles. good to see you back.
Thank you. Co-chairs Olson and Kotek, thanks for having us here. Tyrone Reitman, co-director of Healthy Democracy. So House Bill 2634 passed in 2011, as you all know, sets up the CIR Commission. Our role has effectively changed in a lot of ways. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of our work to support the commission and the CIR. Elliot's going to do the same. But primarily what I've been focused on over the last 8 months is to raise money so that this can continue to happen. And I'm just here to report today that we're well on our way. We've raised about $110,000 to date to support this 2012 round. We have multiple grant applications in process right now. Our goal, our working goal, is to raise about $250,000. And that money would cover two reviews. It totally depends on how the CR Commission determines to use the funds, of course, but that's our working goal. So just wanted to give you an update on that and pass it over to Elliot to talk about other work that we're doing.
Chair Kotek, Chair Olson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to come and give an update on the Citizens Initiative Review. As Tyrone mentioned, we're the main organization, as you know, that has been supporting the process to date, and our role has shifted from one of advocacy to one of just another set of interested citizens. We recognize that we don't have any particular status or proprietary influence over the Citizens Initiative Review. That said, we do plan to participate fully in the rulemaking process as the commission is formed. And in advance of that, in anticipation of that, we've began to draft administrative rule concepts and are kicking those around. We're happy to share those with the governor's office or members of this committee as we go forward. So we want to make sure that we're transferring our knowledge and expertise in how the process was run in the past and offering those up for consideration of the forthcoming commission. Let's see, what else? The appointment process currently stands with the governor's office. They're working with Senate leaders to appoint the first three members of the commission, that's in process, and it should be any day now that those initial appointments should take place. I guess I'd like to take an opportunity to stress that there is a tight timeline that the commission will be up against, and so we look forward to that happening so that the commission can start meeting, start drafting rules, make decisions about how they're going to implement House Bill 2634, and make decisions about which measures they're going to review then in the summer. So practically speaking, based on our experience, there's definitely a need for things to move forward. So we look forward to that. And I guess with that, we're happy to answer any questions that the committee may have about where things stand or our organization's plans going forward.
I guess,
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Elliot and Tara, you guys really got yourself a whale of a job possibly ahead of you here. I mean, with all the initiatives that have been filed. You know, and if all the signatures get collected and everything, and you get them on the ballot, I mean, you guys are really going to be busy with. Tell me exactly what the process is for selection, because I'm trying to remember. I know we had this conversation last year, but I'm just trying to kind of revisit that again.
Sure, Mr. Charison. So the process that we use is random selection. We send out, so in 2010, we sent out 10,000 surveys essentially to voters randomly selected across the state. And from those that were willing to participate, we got back about 400 responses. We made all the responses anonymous and just looked at the demographics for those individuals and then pulled out panels of 24 people that demographically matched the composition of the state electorate if you squished it down to 24, and then brought them to Salem. And we had two panels, I think, for this cycle. I know there are recently a number of measures were submitted for circulation, and it's kind of wait and see to what comes up on the ballot. But I think the way that our fundraising is being received has been really positive, but I think the goal is probably going to be around two reviews, just like it was in 2010, just given the financial constraints of independently raising the money for it.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could make a comment, Chair Kotek, Co-Chair Olson, the commission will make the ultimate decision about how things are going to go forward with respect to which measures are selected and those types of things. So, we would certainly defer to them. So the whale of the job really lies with the commission, and we're here to support it as we can.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm actually taking another perusal through the bill to remind myself of your timeline. What is your timeline? It must be pretty aggressive if we're in February and you need to have those appointments. When do you think Are you expecting to get the appointments done this month?
I'm sorry, could you
repeat? The appointments have to be approved by the Senate.
The appointment process is a little bit different than is typically done for executive appointments. So they originate with Senate leadership from both parties. Senate leadership on both sides, to my knowledge, has submitted names to the governor's office. The governor's office is making a decision about those final appointments. Okay. They don't go back to the Senate. Okay. Right now, the governor's office, I believe, is negotiating with Senate leaders on those initial appointments. Those first three commissioners then select the second four for that initial commission.
Gotcha.
So we're poised at step one for the formation of the commission.
Duly noted. Colleagues, any further questions for Ms. Knobloch, who's still on the phone, or the gentleman here today? Oh.
But I guess just, last thing, we're happy to continue reporting to this committee or members as you all see fit. So please don't hesitate to contact us, and we'd love to share what we're working on. So thank you for the opportunity.
And thank you for the offer. And obviously, as we meet in interim through now in November, there might be a good time to come back when. So just let us know if, when that seems like a good time to do that. And just how you're doing. So
it would be interesting to kind of watch, as you move forward, especially toward November comes, to see what your activity.
And congratulations on making the step to people who have to raise money for the things they work on. So.
Thank you.
That's success in and of itself. And with that, thank you for being here, and thank you, Ms. Knobloch, for being on the phone. And colleagues, that will close the informational hearing. And we meet again on Monday at this juncture. I believe the only thing we might have is possible introduction of committee measures, and we'll let you know if we have anything else going on by Monday. But I believe since the posting deadline for Monday has passed.
For first public hearing.
For first public hearing.
For Monday. That's correct. That's true.
I guess I would even say there might be a possibility we don't have committee, so we'll have to talk about that depending on what we have. So we'll let you know. So,
okay.
With that, thank you, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.